All right. Cool. This episode's going to be a little different than my previous ones. My previous Game of Thrones episodes and reviews have been right after I saw the show, and it was just a quick reaction to it, and just right after it, and immediately what I thought, and everything was off the top of my head, and it was just a whole stream of consciousness thing. This episode, I watched it, and I didn't have time to do a reaction because I was working and I was falling asleep and I didn't have time to record or anything. So I said, all right, well, let me do it at some other time. Then I figured, well, let me just watch it again and take some notes and kind of go over the details with it. So that's what I did for this one. I haven't done it for any of the other ones, and I'm going to do it for the final episode. I'm going a little in reverse. The season's over. I've already watched it. Did a podcast for the final episode, and now I'm going back to do this one, and then I'm also going to do... I did a reaction episode for the final episode, but then I'm just going to do a little more in-depth analysis. Not really an analysis, just what in the episode stood out to me. So that's what I'm doing with this one, Beyond the Wall. And it was definitely... It was a very good episode. It was definitely the weakest out of all of them this season, because it just raised some questions and raised some complaints and raised some nitpicking, and some of it you're going to hear and some of it you won't. And so now I will begin by reading my notes and talk about what stood out to for me with this episode. And the funniest part about my notes is that while I was watching the episode, I was using the dictation on my iPhone. So I would hit the record button and speak my notes into it, but it didn't really translate it that well. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to take a picture of my notes and put it next to information about the podcast, whether it's on my Facebook page or whether it's on YouTube. So just to see how badly the iPhone translated it. So away we go. It's my first time doing it. So I will start off towards the beginning of the episode, or at the beginning of the episode. It showed our merry band of travelers walking from Eastwatch to get the zombie, and it's very similar to if you ever go on walks in real life with big groups of people, how people tend to branch off and talk to each other either one-on-one or kind of in groups, and then when that conversation's over, you go to another group. So I like how they did that. It was cool that they showed people having different conversations while going off, and psychologically what must be going on in their heads, because they're pretty much marching off to what might be certain death, because there's not a good chance they'll come back. They're facing a very, very, very dangerous army of dead things, and so maybe the conversations were a way to just try to talk off some nerves on something that's totally not an equivalent, but it's the only thing I can relate to. I remember when I played sports in junior high and high school, and I played football and lacrosse, and before we would go off to games, I was just always nervous, always, always nervous. It probably was a lesson that, looking back on it, I should never have played these sports because I didn't want to. That's probably why I was so nervous. But, you know, going into a game, going into a competitive game, especially when you can get hurt, brings up nerves. So, you know, whether it was just staring into space or talking to other teammates, at least for me, it was very, very nerve-wracking. So I can't imagine, like, if someone's in the military or the people in our military going off to battle, you know, when you play football, lacrosse, there's a chance you can get killed, a small one, at least get killed right away. You know, there's more and more evidence that your brain gets damaged by it. But even the chance of being competitive and getting hurt, so compare that to when you're in the military going off to battle, you can get killed. So I can't imagine the nerves with that. So And then we're moving on to I'm just reading my notes and how bad it was translated. But the conversation between Arya and Sansa, their first conversation anyway, when Arya's recollecting about how Ned applauded when she finally hit the bullseye with the arrow, it really reflects, and the show does such a great job on how much I miss Ned personally. And how much the characters miss Ned, and I'm sure how much the actors and actresses miss Sean Bean, who did such a great job playing Ned. Ned's one of my favorite characters, probably because of his honor and his honesty. Even though his honor and well, not so much honesty, but even though his honor and always the want to do the right thing ended up getting him killed because he was dealing with someone like Cersei, who is so devious. So I miss that guidance, and I'm sure the characters miss that guidance, because Ned was such a good person to ask the advice, and such a gentle and just a gentle and just man. He was not against killing people and executing people for different crimes. He had his principles, and he was the person who was able to deliver justice on his own. He was a man of great honor. So that conversation about him really, really made me miss him. So I love how, you know, you get invested in a character so much, and it's like, man, I wish Ned was here. You know, I wish Ned was here the whole freaking show, but, you know, killing him off kind of sparked a lot of things. So another conversation between Arya and Sansa was about how Arya was being very accusatory and unreasonable in the conversation about Sansa sending the note. Sansa didn't have any strength to really do anything, and Sansa made that point. She was just a child. And even if she wasn't a child, there was no way she could have done anything, because she would have been dead. If anybody did anything to try to stop that execution, they would have been dead. And the Hound made that point at the Red Wedding when he dragged Arya away. I believe he knocked her out just to drag her away, because Arya was going to get ready to go into the castle, into Walder's castle, and she would have totally been dead. They're just, you know, hearing this conversation, I'm totally on Sansa's side, because it's just so unreasonable. And I would think the Northern Lords, especially Lady Mormont, would understand that. So Arya's really grasping here, and I was just like, come on. It's kind of a stretch. And I think Arya's smart enough to realize that, so I think it just might have been just a flaw in the writing to create conflict between the characters. Something just wasn't sitting right. And when they had a conversation about Sansa said, you know, I've been through things that you can't imagine. The next line that Arya said was something like, I can imagine a lot. And that line's from Star Wars. It's from Star Wars: A New Hope, when Luke says to Han about the reward money he'd get for Leia, and Han says, well, how much? And he says, well, more than you can imagine. Then Han said, well, I can imagine a lot. So I wouldn't be surprised if that line was taken from Star Wars: A New Hope. And continuing with that argument, it kind of turned into a pissing contest between Arya and Sansa regarding who had the harder life. And I'm still, they had horrible lives. And you can't really compare. I can't even imagine what life, if I had to choose, I guess I would choose Sansa's, because even though she was in fear, she at least was fed and had warmth and shelter, even though she had fucking Joffrey to deal with. I'm still on Sansa's side, but it makes sense, I guess, to have some sibling rivalry, especially with terms as serious as this, but still, Arya's definitely unreasonable about this. And we have more conversations. See, the episode has a lot of conversations, but it doesn't matter because the conversations are so good. The quick conversation between Tormund and the Hound was fun, talking about Brienne and just how these two giants, talking about another giant in Brienne. It's so cool how these characters have certain bonds through the people that they know. So, you know, if in any normal walk of life where it's like, hey, man, what's up? Oh, you know, so-and-so. Oh, my God, yeah, I've grown up with her and blah, 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 blah. So to see them bonding over a character, but with the Hound, he was almost killed by and bested by Brienne and Tormund, who's interested in her. So, you know, and then just the fun, like, just juvenile humor between them was good. The Hound is so smart and funny and quick and just so negative and cynical. It's great to hear him bounce off someone like Tormund, who's kind of childish and not childish, but juvenile, like a killer, but juvenile. I also noticed that Beric Dondarrion, at least the actor that plays Beric Dondarrion, who is a character I like a lot. I'm a fan of the Brotherhood Without Banners. He kind of looks like Bryan Cranston in his face. So I noticed that even like with the creases in his face. So that's something that that stood out to me. Going back to Jon and Dany, there's they're teasing a romance. You can just tell the chemistry and the tension building up between them. And the fact that Daenerys is Jon's aunt makes it icky, but Jon doesn't know. So another Star Wars parallel. It's like Leia kisses Luke in Empire Strikes Back. But do you think Lucas knew? Oh, spoiler alert for Star Wars, by the way. But did Lucas know in Empire Strikes Back that they were going to be brother and sister and still write that scene in? But then Leia in Empire Strikes Back said that she's always known. But if you always knew, why did you kiss your fucking brother during that? So there's some discrepancies there. But Jon and Dany do not know that they're related. They just, you know, they respect each other so much, and they're young and they're beautiful people and powerful and shit. And it makes sense politically for them to marry too. So not only are they going to get advantages politically, it's just, you know, they really, really love each other, or at least like each other a lot. But I'm sure once the news gets out, it's going to fuck everything up because it's Game of Thrones. Jesus, you can't have a freaking happy moment on this show. So the conversation, another conversation between Tyrion and Dany. She know about, you know, what to do to, you know, to go and on the subject of, you know, on the subject of Dorne and losing Dorne and losing Highgarden and losing, you know, against the Greyjoy's fleet. The argument that they had was good, but, you know, Tyrion's right in the fact that one needs to be concerned what happens to Dany's army if she doesn't make it. Because she's not married. At least not yet. She's not married. She doesn't have any children. She doesn't have an heir. So Tyrion's right to think ahead. And I think that Daenerys knows that Tyrion's right, but she doesn't want to lose the argument. So, of course, she changes the subject on, you know, on Dorne and losing everything. But Tyrion's right in that he's thinking ahead. You know, what do you do if your queen is lost? And there would be a gigantic power vacuum if Daenerys is gone. Either there would be a vacuum, power vacuum, and there's violence, or the whole, you know, her whole army would fall apart because they wouldn't know who to turn to. So back to the merry band of travelers beyond the wall. I did notice that Gendry had, along with strong arms from rowing, he has good vision seeing the bear like that. And I was surprised and a little disappointed that the writers put red shirts in. And now red shirts is a Star Trek term about how in Star Trek, the original series, when they would go on an away mission, there'd be lower officers in red shirts, and you know that they would be the ones to die. So they did that on this show. I can understand having reinforcements, but it was just so obvious where it's like, well, who the hell is this guy? And it's like, oh, okay, he's just going to be, you know, bear meat, well, along with Thoros, but, you know, just more people to kill. So it's just, it was very, very predictable. I mean, not the worst thing in the world, but it's like, duh. It's like, of course these people are going to die. It would have been cool if they survived and we were introduced to new characters just to make it have some kind of unpredictability in there. But, so Yeah, red shirts, predictable, but whatever. And they were wearing gray anyway. So were they really red? No. It's really cool seeing them all fight together. The main cast of the, you know, John, Thoros, Beric, the Hound, Ser Jorah, Gendry, even though he was going to run off, Tormund, you know, I think I got them all. And that, it shows how good this show is because, and how great the characters are because I was able to rattle off all these characters because I really am invested and like them so much. So it's cool seeing their different fighting styles and how they band together. They're all a bunch, well, maybe with the exception of Gendry, they're all a bunch of battle-scarred veterans who really, really know how to fight. So that was cool. The bear itself was a really good vehicle to show where they needed to go because after they killed the bear, they followed the tracks, along with the Hound, knowing what the mountain is. But it was good action, and it definitely had purpose. It wasn't just to have action. So that's what's so good about the writing on this show. Everything has a purpose and a reason why it's brought into existence. It's not just, you know, there. At least with this episode. Maybe there are examples throughout the shows on the season, but I can't think of anything right now. I love the fact that in these episodes, I believe it was the conversation between Ser Jorah and Beric about Beric being so drunk in the battle and fighting. But I love these allusions to the past about Robert's rebellion, and they don't say it too much, but they always hint at it about the different battles that were going on and how, you know, just the different things everybody did and everybody's role in this huge war. And it just makes me want to see more of it. Robert's rebellion is a part of Game of Thrones that fascinates me. So maybe sometime down the road there'll be stories about it or more in-depth stories about it. You know, Beric storming the Reach, being so drunk. You know, stuff that songs are made of in that world and what legends are made of in that world. You know, they couldn't record anything with any device because devices don't exist in that world. Well, except if you're Bran. But it definitely made me want to see more of it. Another thing that stood out to me is that the White Walkers themselves, the leaders, I think the leaders are called the White Walkers, while the soldiers are called the Whites or the Others. I think that's how it is. But anyway, the leaders, it shows that they're not all-knowing. Even though they're supernatural, they still have to think and strategize. They have to measure out their strategy to Jon's team's strategy. So when they look at, like, fires that are lit or trying to find an opposing army, there is thought involved with them. And I think what this show is doing really well, it shows that they, as well as not being all-knowing, we know they have a weakness. So you just have to kill the White Walkers, the leaders, to destroy anybody else. So it's like cutting off the head and the body follows. So I think that it will ultimately lead to their demise. I mean, a lot of people are going to be killed before that, but that's going to be the way to stop everything. You don't have to kill every walker. You just have to kill the leaders. And that main zombie that they capture is like totally looks like a zombie from The Walking Dead. And I'm not complaining. It's just, you know, Game of Thrones has everything, and you know they had dragons and zombies in the mix, and it's just so cool. I love this show. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that before. Sending Gendry off to run back. I mean, they never said how far they got, and if Gendry runs fast, and it did show a passage of time, so I'm not complaining about it that much, I guess, as some other people are. But he must be a hell of a runner, and maybe the adrenaline is going so strong because either he runs really fast or they just walked really slow. So at least it showed the time going by when things got dark. And, you know, running from these walkers, you know, or the White Walkers or the Whites or whatever, the undead, John's team has to have pretty good cardio. Again, unless it's just adrenaline, but man, between the walk and now running from it and then fighting in battle, heaving those swords and the shields and the armor and all that, oh my god, the strength and the cardio it must take is just, oh, I would die just from being tired. So, and it, the show illustrates how good they are at showing how cold and just how this team seems to be in such an unwinnable situation, because they're just surrounded, waiting for the water to freeze. So, and I was also sad to see Thoris go. For some reason, my notes said, because I was dictating, I like the rosary, sad to see him go. How the fuck did that do that? Do I speak that unclearly? Man. But I guess it was a cool way to go, being killed by the bear and then freezing to death and then the whole being drunk. You know, he never found redemption about not being drunk. He was just always drunk. So Thoris, it's such a cool character. I kind of knew he was going to go eventually, but he's someone I would like to hear more about, and it definitely is a good way to go. Also thinking of the team being so cold, why couldn't Beric use his hand to light the sword on fire, just to, you know, have the sword burning to have some kind of warmth, like, all the time, unless it would melt the sword? I don't know, but for a guy who could create fire, why couldn't you just create a fire so they wouldn't be as cold? I'm not saying they still wouldn't be freezing, but, you know, a little bit of fire probably wouldn't hurt that much. There was another line from Star Wars, and Beric said it. I was trying to remember, and I just did, about there being another. One of the characters said, you know, she's our, I think John was talking about Dany being their last chance, or someone being their last chance, and Beric said, no, there is another. And that was from Empire Strikes Back as well. So I don't think it's a coincidence that was said. I'm also questioning why they didn't take more dragon glass, because the dragon glass and Valyrian steel kills the White Walker, so why couldn't they make swords or axes out of that? So I guess the zombies themselves can be killed by regular swords as well as dragon glass, but unless their weapons were made from dragon glass already. But I'm not sure. They didn't really explain it that much. Maybe they took dragon glass, maybe they didn't, because I thought they had small knives of dragon glass. But one would think everything should be dragon glass. All your shields, all your weapons, but maybe they were in a hurry to leave, I don't know. And there were so many times that I think Tormund is going to die, and that he's a goner, but he's not. Like, the Battle of the Bastards, I'm like, oh, fuck, Tormund's dead. And this battle, too, I'm like, oh, my God, Tormund's dead. There are so many times where he's close to going, and he survives. Tormund's one of these characters who just keeps surviving, like Bronn. You know, Bronn and Tormund just keep surviving all the time. As soon as I saw the Night King grab a spear, like, I knew one of the dragons would be gone. Not Drogon, who Daenerys was riding, but Viserys and Rhaegal. And it was Viserys that got hit with the spear, because, you know, that's how you create tragedy and conflict, and it just shows what a force the Night King is. And he's just so calm and collected and just so, he doesn't really feel the pressure. He just knew what had to be done. Hit that dragon with, it didn't seem like a strong throw, but, you know, that's what special effects are for. And got the dragon and killed Viserys, or at least what we know of this, that what Viserys was. So that was cool to watch, to see them, you know, to see the Night King and his leaders just so calm. It did hurt to watch Viserys die like that, because I don't want to see the dragons even hurt or die, because the dragons have grown with us and we've grown watching them. So, you know, you become attached to the dragons. You know, they are like children in a way, or at very least like a companion animal. Notice how I didn't say pet, because pet is not politically correct and you don't own anything. So, yeah, it was... it was still very sad, not to mention the dragons are so cool. I want to see more dragons. I want to see more than three. That's why I hope with the prequels they have the Dance of Dragons, which is like a ton of dragons all over the place. That would be so awesome. So it sucks. It sucks to see, and I'm kind of rooting for Danny and John now, so it sucks that such a great weapon, as well as a being that Danny cares about, is gone, and I'm glad they showed the weight of that and how sad Danny was when that happened. I thought John was going to go on Rhaegal because he's got to be the second dragon rider. So maybe they're teasing that because as a Targaryen, he'll be able to take to the dragon. But of course, he gets tackled and goes into freezing water. So I don't understand how he didn't die just by being in that water, just from having hypothermia. You know, maybe he's impervious because he's like ice or something. You know how like Daenerys is impervious to fire? Maybe Jon Snow is impervious to ice. Maybe we'll find that out. But it was just like, how is he not dead? Maybe that is foreshadowing. Maybe I made a prediction for once. Who knows? And how... You know, it's Uncle Benjen, and on my notes, I had to pause it because I'm like, what does my note say? On my notes, it was supposed to say, where the hell did Uncle Benjen come in for him? He just came out of nowhere. Instead, it reads, where the hell did that on the bench income for him that he just came out of nowhere? Jesus Christ. It can't tell that I said Uncle Benjen. Apparently, it's on the bench income. It's a good name for a band. No, it isn't. So that's just another flaw. You know, as great as the Battle of the Bastards was, it's like, okay, we get it. It's the deus ex machina where, you know, it's happened a few times on this show. Battle of the Bastards was one, and Uncle Benjen was this one. How at the very last minute, and when the main character's going to die, somebody or something rescues him. So it was fine. It's just I'd rather it have been something else that got John to safety. And going back to Arya and Sansa, a part of me thought that Arya was going to kill Sansa, but I guess that would have been too predictable, and that's why it could have made sense, because it would have been too predictable. So you can be unpredictable by being predictable, but I'm glad the Starks are finally, they at least seem to be aligned, unless, you know, until Jon gets back. Hopefully Jon gets back. So at least not now, anyway, you know, there's that chance of Arya and Sansa being divided, but right now they seem to be holding it together. So we'll see, right? And obviously the last scene where John and Danny looking at each other, John's on the bed and, you know, has the shirt off, and, you know, it was cool that they didn't do anything. You want the romance to build a little bit, but it shows how much they're starting to care for each other. They've been in battle together. They're both very, very smart. They've had these deep conversations, and they're obviously both physically attracted to each other, which, you know, makes a great romance. So it's just building and building and building and building and building until incest happens. And, of course, where did they get that chain? You know, this is a spoiler alert. Spoiler, 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 spoiler alert for the last episode. And I said this on the podcast for the last episode. I'm going to say it again. They did not have to have the chain scene. One, where the fuck they get that chain? Everybody said that. But two, it would have been a better surprise had the ice dragon just appeared instead of seeing the dragon resurrected. I think, you know, I'm all into surprises if they make sense, and that would have been a good surprise. So those are my notes. That's what stood out. Still good episode. The weakest one, but still good. I'm not complaining. I'm complaining a little bit, but not that much. Overall, you know, overall, it's great. It's a great show. So I'm a little out of order time-wise, but whatever. I can do what I want, man. It's my podcast. So thanks for listening. Let me just get my plugs, because I always mess them up doing it off the top of my head. So you can find me on Twitter at Mike Lane Act. That's MikeLaneAct. On Facebook at facebook.com/Mike Lane Actor. Email at MikeLaneAct@yahoo.com. You can find me on iTunes. Just type in music, movies, and more. You can find me on Stitcher. Same thing. Type in music, movies, and more. You can find me on YouTube. My username is MikeLane1. That's the number one. And you can find me on Podbean. I'm at MikeLaneAct.podbean.com. Thanks for listening, everyone. And until next podcast. All right. Bye.